Good morning, hello, and welcome to Ed Says for this, the 21st of February, 2017. Happy Tuesday. Hopefully you were one of the lucky ones who had yesterday off. Busy weekend for me. Hopefully you were as productive. The wife and kid were out at my in-laws. I had the whole place to myself, and one would think steaks and cigars and booze and late nights, but no. It was relatively boring, relatively domestic. I was building shelves. I had to use power tools, and I felt like an accomplished homeowner, and I worked up a sweat. I had my old man hockey league. Like, I did dude stuff all weekend long. I felt manly and did not get to enjoy it as much as I would have liked. Did not spend as much time on the couch as one would have hoped. I actually spent some time Saturday helping someone, a friend of mine who had just purchased a house, just get things set up. And then I, again, like I said, built some shelves and built a bookcase. Didn't really build it. I assembled it. It came prefab. Whereas those shelves I had to cut with a circular saw. It was amazing. I am now, 6'2" and ripped muscle, having done all these manly things. But one thing that did happen in a conversation I was having with a friend in one of my brief periods of rest was someone, they related a story of a friend of theirs who listens to the show, listens to the station, and it somehow came up in discussion because politics, of course, is a big deal these days. Everybody's talking about it. And somehow it came up that my friend knew me. And when their friend, I don't know this friend, it's an outside of the circle friend, just mentioned that they'd listened, and pretty much the response was, how can you be friends with him? And it was met, I hope, with a befuddlement and confusion, because apparently this individual, who I do not know, just listens to the show, was aghast that our mutual friend could somehow find common ground with someone and enjoy their company outside of their thoughts on how maybe politics should be. And every day here, we have a healthy discussion. I try to give everyone a fair amount of time. There are a few rules. Circular discussion gets us nowhere, so I will nip it in the bud there. Not really big on disparaging groups. But there are no permabans. Any bans are self-imposed. But this idea from the individual whom I do not know, who is a friend of a friend, that somehow, some way, because even though we disagree about our president currently, the way things should be versus how they are, we are probably on different ends of the spectrum politically, but somehow, some way, they couldn't register that, yes, I'm just a normal person who likes to get home as soon as I can to see my family, to see my friends, to enjoy my time off. So somehow that my words, which I don't think I've ever said anything that would paint me as such a monster, aside from disagreeing with people, I am all for people having their beliefs and applying them to themselves. I am a big fan of, do what you want as long as it doesn't harm anyone else or you're not forcing anyone else to do what you think is right. I think that's a fair stance to take. But to hear, and honestly, in the big picture, it doesn't matter. And I think that's something that came with adulthood, the confidence to not care what somebody thinks about me. Because I don't. I really don't. If you don't like me and you don't like what I have to say, well, we don't have to cross paths. We don't have to break bread. That's fine. I would much rather enjoy other people's company, but that is a choice made up by others. And with adulthood, coming into that confident area where I'm not living in fear. I'm not living in fear of impressing anyone. I'm not living in fear of losing anyone's friendship. But it just blew my mind that someone would just judge based on 2 hours a day, 5 days a week, and when we are talking about, heated stuff. Let's go to John in Kensington. Good morning, John.
Good morning. You struck a chord right away with me today. I don't want to be surrounded by people that just agree with me. How boring is that?
Right?
I heard just before Christmas on another radio station that my tax dollars fund. They had a woman on from the Institute of Living, how to prepare your children for the Christmas dinner and tell them don't bring up politics and don't bring up Donald Trump. And if the crazy uncle starts, don't look, you know, make eye contact. And I called them up and I said, where would America be if George Washington's father didn't talk, or the Adams or the Kennedys didn't talk politics at the kitchen table and disagree with each other? And we're creating these little snowflakes that they don't want to be around anyone that doesn't agree with them.
You know what? I think being challenged is important.
Democracy. It's bad for democracy when you think that we're going to select these little clusters of political thought and stay separate.
Yeah, you're right. And both sides are guilty of it. And the thing is, people are going to disagree with you. What it comes down to is fundamentally.
I want them to.
Yeah.
I'm wrong most of the time. Why wouldn't I want them to disagree with me?
John, thank you for the call. And I welcome it. I want, and I say it all the time, you know, challenge me. It doesn't have to be, it's not a violent challenge. It's brain play is what it is. Being able to defend your position intelligently and articulately is a good exercise. And just assuming that someone, again, even just to play devil's advocate is a good exercise. And assuming someone is a terrible person just because they don't align with you, couldn't be further from the truth, because oftentimes, look at who you do align with, regardless of your political affiliation. We've all been let down from someone who we've put our trust in those positions. Let's go to Joe in Newington. Good morning, Joe.
Hey, what's up?
Not much. How's your weekend?
Pretty good. We have to work 24/7, 365 for 17 years, no vacation, but I'm all right.
Oh, goodness.
Hey, what do you think of the 1,500-plus pedophiles and pedophile rings that have been busted up since Trumpy's been in there?
Are you talking about what would happen out in California?
Everywhere. Everywhere. This guy is really going after him. And I heard something from a couple ex-CIA people. I mean, this is allegedly, let's put it this way, that one of the reasons Flynn was, they got rid of him was because they were talking about pedophile rings, and also that one of Pence's buddies, a good friend of Pence, they were talking about him, and Pence didn't like that, and that sort of tripped the trigger there, if you know what I mean.
So I don't know how much Trump actually had in play when it comes to those rings, but interestingly enough, there's another name.
I'll tell you one more thing, Ed, too, is years ago, if somebody went to expose that, they would plant all kinds of pedophilia and child pornography on their computer, and they'd be gone for life. But that's sort of coming to an end now.
Thank you for the call. I don't know how much Trump had to do with breaking those up. I'd have to look into the story. I know there was a lot going on in California, but interestingly enough, you bring up the term pedophile, which has been making the rounds in the news yesterday because of comments made by provocateur Milo Yiannopoulos. And we will discuss that next, as he had a no good, very bad day when it comes to being invited somewhere and his book deal. 888-574-2723 is the number into the studio. At Ed Says CT on Twitter, and Ed Says at talkofconnecticut.com. If there's something you want to talk about, whether it's judging people based on their beliefs rather than their character, or what we're going to talk about next, that's the number. Feel free to jump in. We'll be right back here on Ed Says. The name Milo Yiannopoulos is one that is known to anybody who's been paying attention to the news for the past year, probably. Editor over at Breitbart, and a right-wing provocateur. And comments have come up from his past in which he details a relationship he had with an older man in which he says he was a willing participant, and that he would not, that there were certain benefits to it. He then went on to talk about the difference between what he was describing and pedophilia. For him, with pedophilia, it is a matter of physical maturity in the child, And Milo has said a multitude of terrible and awful things for a long time. And people were wondering what would finally break the camel's back. And it turns out that this is it. He lost his book deal with Simon & Schuster. He also lost an invitation to CPAC. As these older tapes have come to light, it's not as though they didn't exist. One was a tape from the Joe Rogan Experience. You know him as the host of Fear Factor and commentator on the UFC. Also was an actor, comedian, news radio, does stand-up. I mean, it's not as though Milo hasn't said provocative things before. And in this case, he would be a victim of what he is describing. And he says that laughter is the way he deals with things, so maybe these jokes are the way he deals with them. But the outrage is there now, costing him the CPAC invitation and his book deal. Let's go to Tim in Hamden. Good morning, Tim.
Good morning. Could we have a moment of silence and everything for the terrible massacre in Sweden?
Yes, it was. That and Bowling Green have been on my mind for a couple weeks now.
So maybe you should explain to your audience.
For those that don't understand or missed it somehow, our president referenced a non-existent terrorist attack in Sweden, and the Bowling Green one was done by one of his surrogates a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, well, of course, he's referencing this when every cable outlet in the world had him on live because it's... they were essentially lazy. Let's just throw on Trump's speech unedited and put it out there for everybody to enjoy. And
his speech, which is essentially, by the way, is his reelection campaign, which is 4 years off. But not only has he already registered for reelection, which seems premature, but now he's already out there campaigning after he accused President Obama of being in campaign mode too much. But then again, he also accused President Obama of taking too many vacations, and I believe Trump spent some time over the weekend golfing with Rory McIlroy, if I'm right.
Well, of course, another story that's being out, there's a good New York Times article and everything about the Alex Jones supporters out there all showing up in their T-shirts, saying, how much they support this president, and, this is another one that, of course, hits home because, Alex Jones, denying the existence of the Sandy Hook
massacre. Well, let me state unequivocally that Alex Jones is a piece of garbage. And he is doing this. He is much like Milo in that there is an audience. He has found his audience that pays the bills. Not only is he a piece of garbage for his beliefs on Newtown, but the fact that he takes advantage of those listeners who love him so by selling them products like brain pills and all this other ridiculous nonsense that is non-existent. Alex Jones is an insult to any of us who actually went to school for what we do, who practice it every day, who bother to be informed. What he does is easy. What Milo does is easy. What I do is hard.
For anybody who wants to see more of Milo, YouTube has the Bill Maher stuff on, which was some of the best entertainment I've seen in a long, long time because it's just absolutely, ridiculous as the panelists just attack this man. But it's you've got the editor there, essentially, trying to spin pedophilia away. You've got the former editor, now on the National Security Council, who's, essentially was bashing Jews, everything else along those lines. When is it going to take all these Trump supporters to start saying, wait a minute here, this is not exactly what I bargained for. So, these aren't the people that I want to be, leading the political discussion because they are... Well, I guess it starts at the top, you've got the top bomb thrower, and all the other bomb throwers underneath them, mimicking what you've got at the top.
I have come to terms with it that if you are talking about a pure Trump supporter, there is no changing their mind. But Donald Trump didn't take the White House purely on those supporters, on those pure Trump supporters. He took it with them and those who were anti-Clinton. And the fact is, he will not keep their support throughout his presidency. It will continue to drop, and all he will be left with is a very small number of people in those pure supporters.
Yeah, but it's interesting. I've already heard a lot of commentators say, well, wow, he got 5,000 people to show up at an airport. I mean, anytime the president shows up at all, no matter which president it is, you probably can get 5,000 to 10,000 people just because it's the president. And it's a unique event, whether it's Democrat, Republican, whatever. You know, people are going to show up. So
right. I mean, I've worked events in when I lived in Richmond, downtown Richmond. We got 20,000 people to pay money to come see a concert. Like 5,000 people seeing the president isn't that big a deal.
Well, yeah, absolutely. But, you know, it is just amazing. And finally, the most bizarre thing, of course, you know, he's still working around with an unsecured telephone, an Android telephone. You know, this is the president of the United States who, you know, God knows everybody wants to, you know, hack into everything that he does. And after the, you know, Hillary Clinton, you know, months and months, we heard nothing but that. And I'm no Hillary supporter, but my God, after all that experience and stuff, you'd think somebody like, no, Donald, you have to do this.
That's really what gets me about all of this. Tim, I thank you for the call.
Thank you.
Is the hypocrisy of it all. We are a month in and he has done everything he accused everyone else of doing, whether it's, email servers, whether it's phones, whether it's vacations, going away every weekend, whether it's ties to big banks. I mean, he's appointed people that, you know, he said Hillary would be in bed with big banks. Well, he's appointed people that have connections to those banks. And it's okay because it's him, because he's not a politician. But he is a politician now. And it's like with Milo. I don't feel bad for the guy. And when the inevitable fall for Alex Jones comes, I won't feel bad for him. Because they are cashing in on something that is fleeting. When it comes to Milo, he's a provocateur. He says, controversial things in order to get attention, and it's going to pay him for the short term. Same with Alex Jones. Eventually, you can only be so crazy. Think about Marilyn Manson, or think about Alice Cooper and Kiss and how shocking they were at first. You know, because, oh my gosh, I've never seen this before. It's so shocking. But then the shock wears off. And that's what's happening with Milo. And that's going to happen with Alex Jones. You know what lasts? Led Zeppelin. Led Zeppelin was pure delivery of rock and roll. Bombast, loud, sure. But none of the theatrics needed that those other bands I mentioned did. The shock didn't wear off. It was just there. And that's why I say it's harder. It's easy to come out and say shocking things. I could make things up off the top of my head and get you, some of you to call my bosses and be like, oh my gosh, and get attention. But I'm looking at the long run, and I don't want to do that. I don't want to sell out. I don't want to sell my soul and who I am and then have to live with that legacy. 888-574-2723. Up next, we're going to talk about the hours Americans work with workplace culture analyst Bobby Albert. That's next on Ed Says. How many hours a week do you put in at your full-time job? Is it too many in comparison to the rest of the world? Joining us now is workplace culture analyst Bobby Albert. Good morning, Bobby. How are you?
Good morning. It's been a great day.
How many hours have you put in so far?
Well, more than most people at this time.
So when it comes to America, I'm looking at the stats here. Americans typically spend 47 hours a week at work. What happened to the 40-hour work week?
Well, it's interesting. This is a study you made reference to, because the French work at 35 hours, and the Great Britain is about 37 to 38 hours there. And this was done by a study by a university in Australia. The purpose of that study was to encourage companies, organizations, to reduce the amount of work hours, especially here in America, so that the employee can increase the level of mental and physical health. Now, that was the purpose of the study. Now, I wish the study went a little bit further, because one thing that I would like to have read or to look at is what kind of impact did it have on productivity in the workplace? Because most people don't want to take a cut in pay. The second thing is that what are people doing with their extra time? Are they starting do they have the discipline to start that exercise program that they've been putting off? Are they starting to eat healthier? Or are they going to take a second job because we live in this gig economy? Or are they going to take a hobby that's going to stress them out? Or finally, are they going to go to their living room, sit on the couch, eat snacks, and watch more television?
Yes. Yes to that last one. I enjoy myself some ice cream and magic shell on top. But let's start with businesses. I do believe that in America, we have this expectation of the 40 hours a week, which here turns out to 47. And I am a believer in doing the job you are assigned. And if you can get it done quickly and efficiently and continue to work on your own, I think that is healthier for the workplace. Like if I can do my job and do it well, like why make me watch the clock? But then at the same time, if you go from the business side of it, they go, well, then if you can get all that job done in X amount of hours, we should give you more or we should pay you less. And you're right. There's a balance there. So you get a lot of people who can achieve great things just dragging their feet to meet the demands of the clock.
Well, one thing that you brought up there that is very interesting, because the study didn't address this, and that was emotional health. And what I mean by that is that there's something deep inside of us that we need to achieve, especially achieve something greater than ourselves, and we would like to have recognition for that achievement. This is the reason why that it's so important for the leader of an organization to create a great, inspiring culture where people understand their core values. In other words, who they are, their purpose, why they exist, their vision, where they're going, and they engage the employees in the decision-making process, which it just so happened I'm writing about this at my website, BobbyAlbert.com.
Now, do you think there has been a shift in business to focus on bottom line over maybe employees? Because as far as management style goes, I am a believer that if you have motivated people and what you just touched on, you know, recognition, you're going to get better results. And if that means cutting an hour or two a day and keeping their pay the same, if your results are better, isn't that a worthwhile investment? Where do you think the advantage is? Is it, you know, cutting pay and saying, okay, you can do whatever you want, or leaving pay where it is and giving them a little more freedom and happiness?
You know, I'm impressed with your question, because it is very insightful that you ask that, because at our company, we had a very, very strong wellness program. We looked at the total person, mind, body, spirit, and emotions. I knew that, for example, we needed more flexibility in the workplace. And it didn't matter to me about, you know, if, you know, what I mean by that is, you know, if someone wanted to work 4 hours or 5 hours, or if somebody needed to get off early to go see their son play baseball. But I also knew that if I could help a husband and wife, for example, have a better marriage, a better family life, it had an impact on the productivity in our company. So what you really were tying into is what I call relationships and results. And we do, there is a tendency pushing more for results and underestimating the value of relationships. This is the reason why in my company, people knew that Bobby Albert really cared for them. And at the same time, they knew that Bobby had high expectations for them to perform at a level of excellence.
And we're speaking with workplace culture analyst Bobby Albert. And I work for a company that is very similar. Like if I have to go get my son from daycare because he's sick, or a doctor's appointment, whatever, they're very flexible. But I also work in a very creative environment. so they kind of know in radio we're all kind of quirky anyway. But it does, it makes me realize that when they do ask something, I know the import of it, and I know that it needs focus and needs to get done. I can't just go, oh, well, I'll get to it, because with that freedom comes expectations. You're absolutely right, and if they're not being met, I think that's what's missing these days is the actual management used to mean managing your people, and now it seems that management just means to keep things from falling apart.
That's another very insightful question, because I talk about and I write about leading is focus on people. Managing focuses on the things of the business, and that's the drive for results. So you're very insightful on your comments there.
Now, maybe I've got upper management written all over me. What do you think?
I'm for that.
Do you see a change? Because the other thing that we didn't talk about is not only are we spending 47 hours a week at work, but we are in touch with, most people are in touch with their workplace 24/7 now. And if that is a job, the case in a job, like that needs to be taken into account. If I'm expected to answer my phone at any moment or be it available by email in the middle of the night, like there has to be a trade-off. And I think some people probably feel like they're getting sucked dry.
Well, that's another very important point, is that in my company, I wanted the people to be able, when they left work, they're on their own. Now, if I knew that I was going to need to call them after hours, I would talk to them in advance and say, look, is it all right if I call you at home tonight about this or that, because it's going to be a while before I get an answer on this. And I never had anybody turn me down. The same thing is, I really did everything I could to avoid people on the weekend. But if I knew I needed to call somebody on Saturday when they were out on the soccer field with their family, I would talk to them in advance, and it never was a problem. Because it goes back to is that I respect them as an individual, and they respected me as the leader of the company.
And Bobby, I think what you just mentioned, I'll describe as communicating. And it seems with all the ways for us to communicate with each other these days, text, cell phones, email, whatever, we seem to have lost that ability to set up expectations. Nobody likes a surprise, I think is what it is. So when you get that unsolicited call from nowhere on a Saturday, you roll your eyes, you go, oh my God, what could the office want? Whereas in your case, if you set it up, they go, here's the call. So it is. It's about communicating and managing expectations, right?
Yes. You're pretty good at this. It is expectation management. My wife will tell you, I enjoy change, but I don't like surprises.
Oh, you and me both. I talk to my wife all the time. I go, if you had given me even a 10-minute heads up on this, I'd be so much better. But yeah, when you just drop something. And if you need a consultant, Bobby, I'm available. I'll make some free time.
Okay, thank you.
Now, you said you're working on a book. You want to talk about it real quick?
Yes, I have a book. It's called Principle Profits. And the subtitle, which attracts a lot of people, is that outward success is an inside job.
And is that out now, or are you still working on it?
It'll be out in April, according to the publisher.
All right, we'll keep an eye out and get you back on when that comes out. Workplace culture analyst Bobby Albert, thank you so much for your time, sir.
Thank you.
Take care. 888-574-2723 is the number into the studio. Very complimentary. Thank you, sir. Maybe I should be looking at a side gig. I don't know. The idea, though, and what he touched on, French employees work 35 hours a week, Brits are 37 and a half, and Americans 47 hours. According to the research, 39 hours is the perfect amount of time, saying that long work hours erode a person's mental and physical health because it leaves less time to eat well and look after themselves properly. The question is the balance. If you're working less hours, should we be paying you less? But for me, it's not about hours. It is about content, contribution, and production. If you are producing the expectation or what's expected of the job, then the pay should be fine. Take Christian, my producer, for example, and I'll try not to insult you today, Christian. But if he were to do my other job, which is production here, probably. So I've got a few years on you when it comes to experience.
Didn't you graduate college the same time I was like six?
Let's just move on. Let's move on. The idea is that it should be production, what you do. And I think that would lead to healthier Americans. We obsess so much about work. And Bobby's right, like setting expectations, communicating. He said the same thing I say. You know, when you're in a relationship, it's all about communicating. Like if I came home tonight, you know, hammered out of my gourd, didn't I tell you that I was going out with the boys? You know, my wife would be like, where are you? And, you know, it's one of those things. It's just about communicating, setting expectations. And again, I just think we as Americans are so far behind the rest of the world, not only when it comes to hours that we work, but vacation time and the way we spend our leisure time. And I'm just as guilty of it. Why am I checking my email on the weekend? I am not that important. I am not saving anyone's life. And if they need me, if work needs me, they will text me or they will call me, because that's when it's an emergency. An email can wait till Monday, but I am the kind of person who I get it done. GSD, I get stuff done, is what I say to my wife, much to her chagrin. And so if I see that email, then I got to move on it. And that's just something that I have to deal with. That's not an expectation the office is putting on me. That's just me. So it is ingrained in us and the workplace culture. I'd certainly like to see it change. I know all of us could do with one less hour, even one less hour a day at work. Just think about it. And get home when the sun's still up, or come in a little later, get to sleep that hour in. Now, I understand that some jobs do not have the type of flexibility, mind us. Like, I am definitely here. I have to definitely be here 10 to noon. That is, like, I can't be like, oh, I'll be in at, 15 after 10. That's not going to work. And I understand that some people have more rigid. When it comes to scheduling, like, we can, I don't know. I think it's healthy, and I think, especially with technology going the way it's going, we should be working less, not the same or more. We should be looking to be enjoying life. Isn't that why we have all this stuff, all this technology, to make our lives easier and to free up our time? On the flip side of that, when it comes to work, there was a protest last week, the idea of taking a stand and paying the price. This is where I have to take the employer's side of things. Last week was Day Without Immigrants. It was the nationwide protest that happened in cities all over, including some places here. And some protesters are finding that there is a price to pay, as this article I found from CNN. One business owner saying, if you're going to stand up for what you believe in, you have to be willing to pay the price. This individual is Jim Sorosky. He is from Colorado. His masonry company said a foreman and 30 bricklayers failed to show up for work, and he fired them all with no regrets. There were others that did the same. And the question here was, is whether or not they notified. Where I fall on this is that if you are looking to protest like this, one, you can't just no-call, no-show. A no-call, no-show, unless it's a dire family emergency, then you're pretty well justified in firing someone. If it is a protest like this and you no-call, no-show, come on. Like, you got to just talk to your employer. And if they say no, then that is a stance you have to take. When it comes to these things, you have to decide what is more important. And there are some crying foul about having been fired. But others, like the position some of the owners were taking, particularly this Mason, when you're talking about the size and scale of the work they're doing, you know, if you don't show, if you're off doing this, then you are hurting the company. And again, I think this goes back to what I was just discussing with Bobby Albert there, is that it's about communication. If you communicate to your boss, hey, they're organizing this thing, we would like to be a part of it, you know, well, double up tomorrow. We'll stay late the next 3 days to catch up. We will keep everything on time. It is all about discussion and dialogue. And I think that's something that's missing from all areas. You can't just do something and expect for people to go, oh, that makes sense, and totally disregard their experience as well, or how it affects them. But when you talk to someone, when you tell them what's happening, it's like a doctor performing. When they say, if you go in for an operation and they go, all right, going to fix you up, and just dive in, you're like, oh, wait, what's going to happen? What are you going to do? Oh, the gas. Oh, I'm out. Hope this goes well as I pass out. Or when they say, okay, we're going to give you some gas or a needle. We're going to put you under. I'm going to make an incision here. I'm going to do this. This. It's all about explaining and communicating. And it's not that difficult, and it doesn't take that much time. And it will be a better end result for everyone. So I don't condemn the bosses who let people go if they weren't notified and if they weren't on board. And that's a decision an individual has to make. If you go to the person and say, hey, I will not be here tomorrow as I am taking part in this protest that I believe in, then at the same time, you have to be willing to accept the consequences. If your boss says, nope, sorry, I can't give you the time off, there's a couple of things there. You have to look at it from their perspective. They're running a business. They've got customers to worry about, all this other stuff. And you have to say, what's worth more? Is your job worth more, or the protest worth more? And for some people, they're willing to say, I'm going to protest because I believe in this that strongly. And I respect that. It's like Milo Yiannopoulos. You can't be upset when your own words come back to haunt you. When you have made the entirety of your career to be provocative, to say shocking things, and when something you said comes back to haunt you. Interestingly enough, during the break, because, I'm addicted to my phone just like the rest of us, I jumped on Facebook and one of my college radio station posted something, and it's from the past, and I'm like, oh, I wonder if there's anything here that could really, really embarrass me. And nothing aside from, the radio name I was using at the time could, or maybe the photograph in which I have I don't want to use the term I want to use. Basically, I have a little patch of hair under my lip. No chin, no nothing, just a patch there, and I believe my eyebrow is pierced, and I've got blonde tips and all this other nonsense. I don't know. I'm so thin, though. And that's one of the things you have to think about is what can be dug up these days, especially in the age of the internet? What are you saying and doing? And Milo has learned the hard way that words have consequences. And these workers learn that actions have consequences. And it's whether or not you believe in them enough to stand by them. Now, Milo is backpedaling a bit because he lost $250,000 book deal and an appearance at CPAC after coming off the Bill Maher show, which some people question whether or not he should have been given that outlet to begin with. There are those that say you don't give them an outlet to spread their nonsense. And there are others that say shine the harsh light of day on it and let people see what is going on. I tend to think there are more people who would disagree with Milo than would agree with him. So I don't necessarily have a problem with him being on. I have a problem with the kid gloves Maher treated him with, but that's another story. But when it comes to making these decisions, if you truly believe in something, you have to be willing to make the sacrifice that might come should, say, your employer say, yeah, you can't do that. Like, how strong are your convictions? 888-574-2723, the number into the studio. I hope I would never have to, at least professionally, come to that. I mean, although I guess at some point I've worked for people who have made me want to quit. And the idea of, not currently, this is years past. Everything's dandy right now. But I stuck around because the paycheck was necessary. Now, whether or not something happens and my convictions are a little stronger, you know, or I'm in a different situation, I think it depends on all of that. You have to decide what you're willing to give up to take that stand. So again, I don't condemn these employers, especially if they weren't informed. I think it would be wise, it would have been smart of employees to at least tie them into it and say, hey, we're kind of trying to do this and test the waters and see what they had to say about it and then go from there. But you got to be willing to, you can't have it all, it seems.